Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Awareness Month begins as numbers continue to rise. In a seventh-month span from 2020 and 2021, family violence crimes in the city of Odessa has risen by a little more than 10%. The family violence crimes numbers from January 2020 to July 2020 were 928. While those numbers have increased to 1,024 from January 2021 to July 2021, according to National Incident-Based Reporting System report provided by the Odessa Police Department, on Monday morning, Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths showed their support as Crisis Center of West Texas and Safe Place of the Permian Basin held a kickoff event in front of the Ector County Courthouse for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Gerke explained, "Family violence crimes in the city of Odessa are some of the highest in Texas, and," he said, "unfortunately, those numbers are on the rise. Domestic violence numbers are up again this year so far, and that's troublesome," Gerke said. "We aren't going to be able to arrest our way out of this problem. It's going to take the community saying that we aren't going to put up with this. The community has to say that we aren't going to put up with domestic violence anymore." Elizabeth Teixeira, the Prevention Services Director at the Crisis Center of West Texas, explained the Crisis Center provides a multi-step program free to anyone who needs their services. Those services include respond, shelter, and education. However, Teixeira explain that if a person is going through domestic abuse and in immediate danger, to contact local law enforcement. Teixeira said, "For the last several years, the Crisis Center of West Texas has really been focused on reducing the number of domestic violence homicides in the community. In March of 2020, we began a program with both agencies called Lethality Assessment Protocol," Teixeira said, "that has really helped connect the most vulnerable domestic violence, those that are at most risk of lethal violence, to community services. That partnership with law enforcement to help us identify those most at-risk cases can help them get them into shelters and help them get into counseling." Crisis Center of West Texas Executive Director Lori Dunham said there is vast community support for people who are experiencing domestic violence. "We have tremendous support from the community," Dunham said. "We have a great partnership with law enforcement, Safe Place of the Permian Basin, prosecutors, and the entire city. We are very thankful for that because not all communities have that." Local News Roundup, Kids Barbecue Competition. The Breast Cancer Awareness Cook-Off has scheduled the 4th Annual Kids Q for a Cure at 5:45 p.m. Friday at the American Legion 501 Veteran Air Park Lane, Midland. The competition is for groups age 6 through 10 years and 11 through 16 years. Entry fee is $25 per child. Includes apron, access to water, meat, and fold-up grill if needed. Visit tinyurl.com/5EPUJWJ6. Concert. The Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present Cory Morrow live November 6th. Doors open at 6 p.m. Opener starts at 7 p.m. For tickets or more information, visit theector.com. Ebony Bar Award. The Black Chamber of Commerce and the Permian Basin will present the 31st Annual Ebony Bar Award honoring Odessa College President Gregory D. Williams at 5 p.m. November 13th at the Odessa Country Club, 1 Fairway Drive. Speaker will be Nathaniel Hearn. There will also be cocktails and dinner. Tickets are $50 per person. Senior citizens are $40. Attire is black tie formal. For tickets or more information, call 432-257-2055. County judge to resign accepts promotion. Ector County Attorney Gregory Barber is resigning less than 1 year after being elected to the post to assume a new role as Assistant District Attorney for the county, Judge Debbie Hayes confirmed on Monday. The Ector County Commissioner's Court will meet at 10 a.m. Thursday to officially accept Barber's resignation. "He's not leaving us," Hayes said on Monday. "I wouldn't have let him leave us that soon. He'll still be with the county, but in a different position." Barber could not be reached for comment on Monday. Hayes said the county will not fill Barber's county attorney position, which was responsible for civil cases. Those responsibilities will instead now fall under the jurisdiction of Dwight Richard Dusty Gallivan, who was elected Ector County District Attorney last year, Hayes said. The state legislature last year approved an organizational change that places all misdemeanors and juvenile and child protective services cases under the county's district attorney, Hayes said. The consolidation will be more efficient, Hayes said. Commissioner Mike Gardner said Barber has been an asset during his brief stint as county administrator and will continue to do the same in his new role. "His work speaks for itself," Gardner said. "He's done a lot of good work for the county." Obituary, Nancy Elaine Hernandez. Odessa. Nancy Elaine Hernandez, 69, of Odessa, passed away on Friday, October 1st, 2021. The family will receive visitors from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday, October 7th, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, October 7th, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Nancy was born on January 5th, 2052 in Pecos, Texas, to Jim and Mary Lou Rosen. Nancy is survived by her husband Joe Hernandez of Odessa, two children, daughter Sarah Brooks of Abilene, and son Matthew Hernandez of Odessa. She is also survived by five grandchildren. Nancy is preceded in death by her father and mother, Jim and Mary Lou Rosen, and her granddaughter, Caitlin Brooks. Online condolences may be made to www.npwelsh.com. Death notices. Dean Dwight Rogers, Odessa. Dean Dwight Rogers, 50, of Gardendale, died Thursday, September 30th, 2021 in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa. Tomasa Alvarado, Odessa. Tomasa Alvarado, 79, of Odessa, Texas, died Monday, September 27th, 2021 in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. October 7th, 2021 at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial will be at Ector County Cemetery. Visitation is open to the public from 5 to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home on Wednesday, October 6, 2021. Rosary will start at 7 p.m. Father Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home at 7511 of Odessa. Mildred LaVon Bean, Midland. Mildred LaVon Bean, 89, of Midland, Texas, died Sunday, October 3, 2021 in Midland, Texas. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. October 6, 2021 at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Perry Lynn Ford, Odessa. Perry Lynn Ford, 69, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, September 29, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Graveside service is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 6, 2021, in Sunset Memorial Gardens. Juan Garcia is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. John Weleg Manthag, Corpus Christi. John Weleg Manthag, 43, of Corpus Christi, died Tuesday, September 14, 2021, in Corpus Christi. Chapel service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday, October 9, 2021, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 18, 2021. Few points. Flight to Austin is good news for Midlanders. Stuart DeRain, editor. Midlanders often ask us, where's the good news? That's a good question. In the midst of a pandemic, it is easy to think that all news is bad. That's not the case. Still, it was a pleasure being able to bring our readers the news that Southwest will be adding a direct flight to Austin in March. In the transportation game, more direct flights to more cities matter. When you fly to Denver or Las Vegas or Dallas or Houston, like Southwest does out of Midland, often it is to catch a flight to somewhere else in the country. It was interesting to hear that Southwest, in adding more direct flights out of Austin, was setting up Austin-Bergstrom International Airport to become a regional hub. Southwest announced this week that it is planning 20 new flights per day. Those locations include Midland, Amarillo, Charleston, South Carolina, Columbus, Ohio, Ontario, California, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, Panama City, Florida, Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida, and Destin, Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Airline travel is as much about quality of life as anything else. Having direct access makes life easier and flying more tolerable. When Southwest dropped the direct flight in 2009, it meant traveling to Austin forced a person to fly to Dallas or Houston first. That will no longer be the case. Also, it seems fitting that it was Southwest making a direct flight to Austin possible. I'm a Texas boy. I grew up catching a Southwest flight from Dallas to Midland once or twice a year to visit family. Southwest has provided convenience and often transportation opportunities for Texans that other airlines can't match. Real quick, what's the difference between Midland, Abilene, and San Angelo? Southwest made Midland its seventh city in the airline system in 1977. That was a quality of life and business coup for our city. Just ask your friends in those cities or Wichita Falls or Bryan College Station. It is tremendously exciting to see nonstop flights to Austin return to Midland International Air and Spaceport, said Midland Development Corps President Sarah Harris. Air transport provides vital economic benefits and is a critical component of our city's economic stability. It improves quality of life and contributes to sustainable development by facilitating travel and trade. Companies interested in expanding in or relocating to Midland ask first about Midland's available commercial air service and direct destinations. An additional direct flight to and from Midland indicates confidence in our region. The Midland Development Corps thanks Southwest Airlines, MOTRAN, and all partners involved in reestablishing the Midland to Austin route. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton added, as Midland and the Permian Basin continue to lead the world as the most secure oil and gas producing region on the globe, it is great news to see Southwest begin to expand offerings. We are grateful for all that have been working toward these improvements, as we know abundant and dependable air travel is essential for our continuing growth. So, yes, that is some good news. Even if you never fly to Austin, like Las Vegas or Denver before it, you have the opportunity, and opportunity is everything. Thank you to James Beecham of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, State Representative Tom and Nadine Craddock, and Ray and Lorraine Perryman for their work over years that will make it easier for those traveling to University of Texas games, others testifying before the Texas legislature, and even a few people who want to get a little weird in the People's Republic of Travis County. Midland Health CEO Myers answers questions on COVID-19 by Stuart Doreen. sdoreen@hearstnp.com. It was an up-and-down week for Midland Health. The number of COVID inpatients has declined, but the hospital also learned it wouldn't be receiving as many Regeneron monoclonal antibody infusions as it had in the past. Where does everything stand? Midland Health President CEO Russell Myers offered these answers to often asked questions during Thursday's online hospital update. Question: have any patients been reinfected with COVID and admitted to the hospital? Answer: we've said before that that's not a data point that we've been collecting, so we didn't have readily available good data. We've done a little bit of study, we've worked with the health department, and based on the information we have, which is not exhaustive and is not absolutely certain, we are not aware of any patient who's had a second infection, been infected with COVID, fully recovered, been reinfected, and then readmitted to the hospital. We're not aware of anybody who fits those criteria and has been readmitted with a second infection. We know there are a few second infections in the community, but those patients are not being admitted to the hospital. Question: are inpatient elective surgeries still on hold? Answer: yes, they are. While our census is falling, we have not quite recovered to the point that we feel comfortable reopening to elective inpatient surgery. The day is coming. We have conversations about that just about every day. We'll be reassessing the situation into next week, and we'll continue to keep you updated as it evolves. But as of now, elective inpatient surgeries are not happening in Midland Memorial Hospital. Emergency surgeries that require inpatient stays are happening and will continue to happen. That's not part of that issue. Question: what is the total number of staffed beds that Midland Memorial can manage without contract workers or state employees? Answer: that is a kind of a difficult question, a hard one to answer, because it varies depending on the nature of the patients, the conditions that we find them in, and the broad scope of patients we care for. That can vary from one day to the next. But in general terms, we're working well over 100 contracted staff, about 30 state staff. If you took all of those out of the mix, we'd have to drop at least 60 beds. We could perhaps operate as many as 200 beds down from the 261 we're operating now. That's a little bit of a squishy answer, because it depends on the types of patients we see, but we think that's in the ballpark. Question: how many people are getting Regeneron every day, thus decreasing admissions? Answer: that's a really good question. I've talked about Regeneron some today, but the average number recently has been about 40 patients per day. We've been really pleased at the demand. We've continually ramped up our ability to deliver more and more Regeneron infusions as the demand increased, and we've broadened our criteria to give it to more people because we know it works. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to give that many going forward. So, Wednesday, we were down to just over 100 available doses. So, we'll essentially be rationing that to only the highest risk patient population. and 40 a day won't be our number going forward. We've been doing that many in recent weeks. Question: how long will Memorial have contracted and state employees? Answer: the answer is different for the two categories. The state has informed us that the staff they're providing will be available to us through the end of October. Now, that doesn't mean they'll all be here. Every one of those persons has contracted with the state. Each of them has their own life and their own priorities, and we have had some attrition, some people for whom the state would continue to fund, but the individual isn't willing to continue to stay. And I think we'll probably have a little bit more of that. So that's a little bit uncertain. With regard to the staff we contract with directly, typically we're contracting for 13-week commitments. So, while those staff members have started over a staggered period of time, their endpoints will be 13 weeks, typically, after the day they started. We're still starting new people every day. We have some lined up for next week. So, in the next 3 or 4 months, we probably will see most of those contract staff members' commitments end, but we'll also then be into the winter months when our census tends to go up for other reasons. So I expect we'll have a substantial number of contract staff on board for the foreseeable future and to the late spring or early summer of next year. Question: is Midland Memorial Hospital refusing therapies that some doctors in the community have believed might be helpful in order to keep COVID patients in the hospital and increase profits? Answer: that is a widely questioned point, but it starts with a false premise. There's nothing about the COVID patient population that is profitable, that is money-making for Midland Memorial Hospital, and I would submit for any hospital. We have lost about $3 million since the beginning on treating COVID patients. The inpatient stay for a medical patient of any kind, including and especially COVID patients, is rarely profitable. We rarely get enough money to cover our costs when we have a medical patient in the hospital. Accordingly, we try to balance those medical patients with surgical patients, with outpatient procedures, with imaging and things where we do make money. It's a balance to keep the hospital doors open. All those medical patients that lose money are offset by the surgical patients and others who make some money. And overall, we try to make a little bit of money so we can reinvest it in the hospital. The COVID patients do not make money under any circumstances as inpatients, and it's very important to recognize that the longer they're in the hospital, the less money we make, the more money we lose. For almost every payer, we get a flat amount reimbursed to the hospital for the care of that patient. So, the more days they're in the hospital, the more cost we incur, the more money we lose. There's no incentive to keep the COVID patient or any other patient in the hospital longer than they absolutely have to be in to serve their needs.
Male breast growth, testosterone. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 70-year-old male who has been experiencing an increase in breast size, slightly more on the left than the right, over the past year. I am healthy and have taken no medications for the past 6 months except sildenafil on an as-need basis. I am approximately 10 to 15 pounds overweight, but exercise regularly. Because of male breast cancer on my uncle and my mother's side, I had a mammogram and ultrasound recently, which was negative. What could be the cause of this condition? BP. Answer: gynecomastia, the development of breast tissue in men, is common among newborns at puberty and again in adulthood, but all for different reasons. For older men, breast cancer is indeed a concern. I am glad that your doctor sent you for the appropriate diagnostic tests. Even though breast cancer in men is uncommon, it's wise to make sure. The most likely cause in older men is the lowering of testosterone levels that is normal in a man's 60s and 70s. This can be tested via a simple blood test. Ideally, the testosterone level should be drawn at 8 a.m. and then repeated if low. A trial of replacement testosterone is appropriate only if the blood level is low. The sildenafil you are taking, usually prescribed for erectile dysfunction, may be a clue that your testosterone is low. Your thyroid level ought to be checked, as uncontrolled hyperthyroidism is another cause of gynecomastia.
This is the Dear Abby column. Family meals repeatedly cause digestion issues. Dear Abby, my husband was instructed by his doctor to avoid dairy due to a chronic condition that negatively impacts his daily life. Around the same time, his father and his girlfriend began implementing the keto diet into their lifestyle. We are often invited to their home for game night. She takes pride in preparing a home-cooked meal for everyone. We've been open about my husband's dietary restrictions, but dairy remains a heavily used ingredient in these dishes, and it is often hidden or disguised by a different name depending on its preparation. She seems to think that because my husband isn't allergic to dairy, it's okay for him to consume it. However, because we've both changed our diets to exclude dairy, these visits often end in stomach pains and, for him, other discomforts that may last for days. We enjoy the game nights, but fear a more direct approach will hurt our newfound relationship with his father's soon-to-be bride. What would you suggest? Signed, Restricted in Arizona. Dear Restricted, I suggest you be very direct and descriptive with your father-in-law and his soon-to-be fiancé about the effect that dairy products have on your husband. Pain for days? That's terrible. And if your husband's dietary restrictions can't be accommodated, either eat beforehand or bring your own food to the gathering. Dear Abby, I am 55 and have waited for the right man. The only regret I have is that I didn't find him earlier because I went into early menopause at 33. I wish my values weren't so strict, but I have met someone who seems to respect my desire to wait until marriage. The problem is our relationship has many negatives. We live 2 hours apart. He loves to gamble. I am educated and he has a learning disability. Most of the time I feel like I'm in fourth place in his life behind his family, his friends, and his gambling. I don't feel he really wants to be with me. Sometimes I wonder if it's because of the sex thing. However, I don't want a relationship based on sex. I want him to want to spend his time with me, and I want us to become one, and I don't see it happening. I also don't believe he can budget for anything more than paying his bills and gambling the rest of his money. It doesn't seem like he would choose to be with me rather than with his friends and family. Am I wanting too much? I'm afraid what he is after is security, not a loving relationship where you become one in life. Signed, Waiting for Mr. Right. Dear Waiting, I don't think you want too much. What you are searching for is what most people want, a life partner who is considerate, loving, and whose values are close to their own. Because you support this person suspect this person is after financial security, please listen to your gut. If you really believe you are four notches down on his list of priorities, do not settle. End this romance now.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.